This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
The number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man they can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Call him every trash, CMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And a very good morning to you and yours. Monday, February 22nd, 2021. It is DCR with you right here on 98.7 ESPN. I hope you had a good weekend and you get ready for the start of the last week of February. And it's nice to be able to say that. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dave. Good weekend on my part. My girlfriend took me out to dinner on Friday night. It was nice to kind of get out of the house and actually have dinner inside the restaurant rather than the sidewalk. So that was pretty cool. But it was a good weekend for me. How about you guys?
Good. Rick, how was your weekend? Nice weekend?
Weekend was nice. I mean, I would have rather, you know, cruise to a victory with the Knicks. But, I mean, 21-point lead disappears. And, I mean, listen. Give them credit. They found a way to get that thing done, but it did not need to be that close. Let's be honest.
No, absolutely not. Against a terrible team who fired their coach after the game. But beggars can't be choosers. We're the Knicks, right? I mean, if I just tell you the Knicks win the game, that's a success.
Knicks win the game, I'll take it. You're right. I will take the win. It was one of those, you know, rare occasions where it looked like it should be a blowout. Minnesota stinks. I mean, they ended up firing their coach, which is still sketchy. They fired their coach and already hire a new coach to a long-term deal. But, I mean, 21-point lead, you got, what, 1:48 left in the third quarter? I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yep.
Nice one.
Yep.
Sit back, relax, and then no. But Julius Randle, a couple big plays down the stretch. My only concern is, I mean, Rose and Quickly, again, were bad, which concerns me a little bit. Because those are the guys that you lean on to close game, have closed games for you. And you had no one. I mean, outside of Julius Randle, who do you have to close?
You have nobody. Those are the two guys that you count on. But so it's two games in a row that they've been bad. I mean, the other night they were, what, like 2 for 22. Was horrendous. Last night Rose was really bad. I mean, he was so. If you're so bad that Clyde is making comments over and over of how bad you are offensively, that's bad.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. I mean, you talked about it, Dave. They weren't great against the Magic. They weren't great last night. And in the last two games combined, they're 4 of their last 37. So, I mean, those are the guys that you're depending on to be able to create to be that instant offense. And when you made that trade for Derrick Rose, you saw the difference in the Knicks games was how great their second unit was in comparison to other teams' second unit and having the ability to be able to outplay those guys and create on the offensive end. That has been the difference. That has been the catalyst for the Knicks being in this position right now. And you're wondering whether or not these guys are going to be able to find their footing because you realize how much this team needs them to play well.
And Towns was great in the fourth quarter.
He was.
And he took over in the fourth quarter.
How many guys did Minnesota have playing last night that you were like, who is this man? Right? I mean, they had a guy, Norwell? They had McLaughlin? Like, they had multiple guys last night that you watch him, you're like, I am not familiar that this man ever walked the face of the earth before this game, no?
Yeah, I mean, they're not a good team. And they were sloppy. I mean, they made threes, though. I mean, give them credit, they made threes. I mean, they made 60 and the Knicks made 6, which is a huge disparity, and that's the reason why they're in the game. But, I mean, that Towns is their guy. I mean, they got, you know, Edwards who, I mean, didn't have a big game. And then you got, you know, Ricky Rubio running around with the man bun. But, I mean, it's a game they needed to win, and God forbid they didn't.
Thank God they won that game. Could you imagine? And let's open it up to the Knicks fans. And the Nets as well. We'll get there in just a moment. Kind of the double open on 98.7 ESPN. Could you imagine what today would be like if the Knicks had lost that game? So I agree with you. It's like you feel kind of queasy about it because you're up by 21 against a horrendous team at home. And you've had days off and you have to fight for all get out to be able to get the win. But you got it. Right? And that's the important part. But could you imagine what today would be like? If you lost that game, if you're the Knicks, we would be talking about that being, and not even close, the worst loss of the year by far.
By far the worst loss. Coming on the heels of them, and you had a couple days off, chance to practice. And you saw the energy level. I mean, you saw them on, I mean, they looked like they were well-rested. They were good in that game defensively until the fourth quarter. But, I mean, that would have been, I mean, coming off of the loss to Orlando when you have a chance to get the 500 and to now have a 21-point lead and blow it and lose to that team.
Against the worst team in basketball.
Been awful. I don't even want to imagine it. I don't know if I would have been able to do the show.
You would have done the show.
I don't know.
You would have had quite the weekend, huh? Rangers just winning games left and right. Islanders losing games left and right. Chris, it would have been very difficult for him this morning.
Would have been difficult for him, Dave. But you know what? The Knicks didn't put him in that situation. So they got the win, feel like they're back on track, and we'll see what they do before the All-Star break.
Fans at the Garden on Tuesday night, by the way.
That's going to be great. How pumped would you be if you had tickets to go to one of these games? How pumped would you be?
I'd be so excited.
That Garden's going to be going crazy.
Crazy. It's been a year. We haven't seen fans at a Knicks game for I mean, we're approaching a full calendar year. I don't care if it's 2,000 or 1,000 or 500. It's got to be exciting. And it's got to be big for the players, too, just to have some contact at the game, right? Just to have people rooting for you and some noise and not just, you know, deafening silence game in and game out now.
Yeah, bring some juice, bring some energy. I mean, sometimes that's the toughest part. I mean, when you play in these, you know, situations where it's every other night, I mean, it's not easy to always have the kind of intensity that you need, and sometimes you do lean on the fans to get you going. So, I mean, you got to give coming from the bubble where they had nothing to now, I mean, again, to start a season with no fans, you got to give the players tons of credit for being able to bring it every single night. Because they've done that. I mean, this Knicks team has played. That's the one thing that you can count on every single time you turn on the Knicks is they play hard every night, and they do play with a ton of intensity.
You see it every night from them, which is great. And I think we know why. I mean, you can attribute that, in my estimation, to one guy, and that's Tom Thibodeau, who demands that of them. Because if you don't bring it, you're not playing.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to the guys that are going to – I mean, you saw it last night. I mean, the bench wasn't good again, and he went back to the guys that he trusted. Unfortunately, there really is only one guy. I mean, if Quickley and Rose aren't going, there really is only one guy down the stretch that you can rely on. I mean, R.J. Barrett was good. But again, he misses so many
easy shots.
He makes the tough one, and then he has these little bunnies that he ends up missing. It drives me crazy. But I mean, he's still young and he's learning. But I mean, I think that's why we keep circling back to the fact that this team where they're at right now, I mean, they're a playoff team right now.
Yes.
Right? I mean, right now they're
the seventh seed, right?
Correct. So, I mean, they're the best defensive team in the NBA. They're just what would happen if you did? And I know Knicks fans don't want to hear because they don't want to give draft picks and everything else. Or a young player. But if you could keep Julius Randle and you added Bradley Beal to this team, I wonder, I mean, what this team would be capable of doing?
I mean, I think you're a playoff team now, and I said that last week, you guys yelled at me, but I mean, I think you're absolutely a playoff team, and I think you're like a real playoff team. I think you're probably a top six seed. If you add Beal and keep Randle, and if you traded R.J. Barrett, and then just a lot of future picks... How could you not say this is a top six team in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I'd be right there with you, Dave. I mean, you're probably somewhere in there, 4, 5, 6. I mean, right now, the Pacers are the 4th seed, the Raptors are the 5th seed after the little streak that they've gone on. I mean, and the Celtics are the 6th seed, but they're hustling backwards. They're scrambling. So, I mean, yeah, if you add Brad Beal and you're able to keep Julius Randle, this is absolutely a team that we're talking about in a real playoff series and not in those play-in games. And, I mean, if you have an opportunity to be able to do that, who cares about the picks or the pick swaps, man? You're talking about this team being competitive for years to come. Brad Beal, a young star. Julius Randle, a young star. Probably going to get voted in. Not voted in, but probably going to be announced to be an all-star tomorrow night. Like, it just feels like you have the makings of something special, and you realize that you have the right coach to be able to maximize the potential of whatever that group would be. Why wouldn't you try to do that deal if that's what's on the table from Washington?
Yeah, which is what? What have we heard it is now, Chris? We're talking about this pre-show meeting. It's a young player. And let's just say, for argument's sake, a young player that they would want, that's got to be R.J. Barrett, right? That's
Let's just say R.J. Barrett. I think it's 3 first-round picks, 2 swaps, and then an expiring contract.
So a value now that's going to be taken away from this team, it's R.J. Barrett.
Yes. But you don't have a problem with that, though. I mean, listen, you're swapping out R.J. Barrett for Brad Beal.
And what are those picks? I mean, and whatever those picks end up being.
I got to tell you, I think I would do that trade.
If you can get Beal to sign an extension, like to know, I mean, you're not trading for him unless you know you're going to have him long term.
Yes.
Well, of course not. Absolutely.
And by the way, too, don't start again. Dave the victim. You guys were all over me for saying the Knicks were a playoff team. We didn't say you couldn't talk. I mean, Just don't all of a sudden now out of nowhere start bringing up the playoffs, and then you see what happens in Orlando. Because you're the mush.
But I'm not the mush. If I was the mush, they would have blown that game last night. I think by coming back and winning that game and making plays down the stretch, that I am not the mush.
No, Minnesota's just bad enough where, I mean, the Knicks were able to survive you being the mush is what happened.
No. No. You're not accurate with this. I said, and I stand by it, I expect them to be a playoff team. I didn't guarantee anything. I didn't say it's 100%, you know, lock it away. This is a team that's going to the postseason. I said I expect them to go to the playoffs. And you know what? I do. And you know what? You should. And I don't mean you guys. The Knicks fan should expect this team to go to the postseason. And I stand by it.
This is what happens. This all started, again, because you decided to shame RJ on the air. And now you make the same mistake and you want to backpedal. As Don LaGreca would say, I bet your hamstrings are pretty tight from all this backpedaling. Lucky I don't slap your face dead. Because that's the next step.
Well, that's not very nice.
Well, it's not very nice. But since you said that, all of a sudden the bench can't play. I mean, Quickly and Rose can't score. And they're trying to blow games.
Yeah, and this is my fault.
This is your fault.
I ruined Derrick Rose.
And if Julius Randle doesn't get voted into the All-Star game, this is on you. I'm telling you right now, it's on you. Because there's no reason why he should be an All-Star.
You're one of these? Why? Because it's something I expect? I didn't guarantee. If I said it's done, RJ said that a tennis match was over. He pronounced it as over. That's different. If I said I guarantee the Knicks go to the postseason, that's not something I would do. But all I said is I expect them to go to the postseason. You don't see the difference between those two things.
Nope, there's no difference.
There's no difference.
You're no better than Pecota right now. I'm going to start calling you Pecota Dave.
Okay.
Now, Mets are going to, my 11 games, they'll win the division. Stop yourselves. By the way, quick Julius Randle nugget. More reason why he needs to be in the All-Star game. There are currently only three NBA players averaging at least 23 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. Can you name those three players?
Jokic, and Giannis.
And Julius Randle, baby.
That's it. Not LeBron, huh?
Pretty good company, my man.
That is really good company. But he's an all-star. You don't have to think about it for a second. If you can just say, is this guy an all-star or not, and there's no hesitation, he's an all-star.
Would you be disappointed if he wasn't?
Yeah. I would. Why? How's that funny? He's deserving of being an all-star, is he not?
Absolutely, 100%. It's not even a question.
I don't understand why you're giving me a hard time. It's Monday morning. It's a great day. Last week of February. I hate February, so that's good news. And you're giving me a hard time for no reason.
Well, because I'm sitting there watching the second half of this game this morning. And
you were angry at me, weren't you?
Well, yeah, third quarter's going great. And I'm like, okay, yep, this is going to be perfect. Just kind of breeze through the cardio, you know, talk about, you know, how great the Knicks played. And then all of a sudden, Towns happens in the fourth quarter. And now I'm down a point. And luckily, I mean, let's be honest too, Dave. I mean, Towns is, I mean, that ball was in.
Yeah.
On the baseline.
Yeah.
Thank God.
No, it was not pretty. But again, it's a win, and we take that. All right, so 800-919-3776. Knicks on the table. Trade for Bradley Beal. On the table. Do you expect this team to go to the postseason? On the table. And we didn't even get into, I mean, clearly the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, it's the same song and dance every single day with the Nets. It's just, I mean, they beat this team who's really good. They beat that team who's really good. They do it without Kevin Durant. They are, for lack of a better term right now, Rick, rolling on this West Coast trip. And rolled on that West Coast trip. They were terrific.
Without Kevin Durant, which is
without Kevin Durant, yeah.
I mean, Jeff Green ends up getting hurt in that game. DeAndre Jordan was awesome. But, I mean, that's, I guess outside of, I mean, how well Utah has played, I mean, is there right now, today, at the moment, a better team than the Brooklyn Nets in the NBA?
No.
Be hard-pressed.
I don't think you even have to qualify with Utah. I think people looking at the games, the Nets are on a different level than the Jazz. They just are. I mean, offensively, we know what they're capable of, but if they can play defense like that situationally, like they did last night, like James Harden in that last possession on Kawhi Leonard and drawing that offensive foul, I mean, this Nets team is absolutely going to be in the NBA Finals. It's just a matter of who they're going to face off with from the West. I would still bet on that being with the Lakers, even though that Anthony Davis situation worries me. But, I mean, this Nets team I mean, think about it. They haven't really had the big three play together consistently where they can get that chemistry and get that rapport. I mean, once those guys get some games under their belt, think about how much better this team is going to be once we hit the postseason.
What did they get last night from those two? They got 65 last night from Kyrie and
They got 37 from James Harden. And I know Kyrie Irving played well in stretches. He had a great first quarter, but he was miserable in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, last night was all about James Harden. I mean, and I'm starting to come around to Rick's position that James Harden might be the most important part of his team. Like, Kevin Durant is going to be in the MVP conversation. But James Harden, in terms of his playmaking ability and how he sets the table for everybody else, he's probably the most important guy for the Nets.
He plays a ton of minutes. I mean, he's reliable. I mean, that's why he had to make the deal. I mean, with Kyrie, as good as Kyrie is, and a couple of those shots late. I mean, a couple of those threes he took late.
Well, the last one was
step back three,
right?
Was a terrible shot.
Terrible shot. By the way, too, the offensive foul. I mean, that's Kawhi Leonard. Stop yourself. I mean, that's
no, that was an offensive foul, though. That was an offensive foul.
Oh,
I hate it.
Really?
He extended. Yeah, he extended his arm.
I thought that was a tremendous acting job by James Harden.
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't an acting job, but I'm not saying that it wasn't an acting job, but I am saying that was an offensive foul.
Like Dustin Hoffman was like, boy, good job by you, James Harden. Well, bravo, well done.
I'm an excellent driver.
Yes.
No, but seriously, I mean, they needed some stability. Because Kyrie, I mean, let's see, as good as he is, I mean, he's a wild card in this whole thing. Like, you never know what he's going to take his sage and his walking stick and go home for a couple days. Like, you don't know about that. And then KD dealing with, you know, injury concerns because of the Achilles. You want to protect him. Like, you're gonna be overly cautious with KD if anything comes up. The one guy that you rely on every single night, and he plays big minutes, is James Harden. I mean, he's been everything you could have asked for and more if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan.
He's great. You know what? And let's say they're great. They are. When I can't even imagine what it's going to look like when they are fully healthy and a well-oiled machine. Because right now they're not, and they're still beating. I mean, they beat the Lakers. And I know no Anthony Davis, but they beat up on the Lakers. They beat the Clippers. They go 5-0 on this trip. There is no team that you look at right now, no team in the NBA that is better than Brooklyn.
Well, how do you defend them, though? I mean, you saw last night. I mean, it was like, okay, let's make sure the secondary guys don't beat us, and now we can focus on, you know, because we, I mean, look at the Clippers. I mean, you guys tell me, as far as perimeter defense is concerned, between Kawhi, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, that's some of the best in the business.
Well, it helps when Paul George is not in the game in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's a joke.
That actually helps.
That is a joke.
But no, you're right, man. It's hard to defend this Nets team. There are no good answers. Like, you're not going to be able to shut them down. The best thing that you can do is try to make it a one-possession game at the end, which is what the Clippers did. And unfortunately, they weren't able to make the plays. Now, I know that it was a little bit of a cheap shot by Pat Beverley on that screen by Jeff Green.
He's dirty.
Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of love it if he's on your team, right? And you hate it if he's on the opposing team. But, I mean, it ends up being fortuitous for the Nets because if you're talking about Jeff Green being in, I'm not sure that he's able to get that tip in that DeAndre Jordan gets off the Kyrie miss. I mean, and that was ultimately the difference in the game. So, I mean, I just with this Nets team, the only question that we've had is can they stay locked in, can they stay engaged, and can they play solid defense? Not even great defense, but just solid defense, adequate enough defense. And, you know, I just, with what we've seen on this West Coast trip and what they've done, I mean, coming back in the Phoenix game from down 24 and then being able to do what they did last night, putting their foot on the gas in the second quarter, going from being down 6 to up 8. Like, those are the things that you got to have if you're going to be a championship team. Being able to have the grit to overcome some injuries. TLC goes out. Jeff Green goes out. And they still find a way. Like, being able to have that kind of toughness, you need that if you're going to be able to compete for a championship. And the Nets showed that over the last 5 games.
All right, you mentioned Paul George not being in down the stretch, which was, I mean, as Joe Namath would say, mind-boggling, because it really was. Here's Ty Lue on what the rationale behind George not being in late stage was.
Hey, Ty, was PG not in there at the end because of a minutes restriction?
Yeah.
Was it planned that he would only go until maybe like the last 4 minutes, or was it just you guys were, he was going so well you had to keep him in there?
I thought, you know, the game kind of got out of hand, and, you know, we had to bring him back to get the game close, and he played well and played good to get us back in it. And then, you know, it's a tough decision, but like I said, the biggest thing is that he's healthy, and the biggest thing is the player's health. And we did what we could, and, you know, it is what it is.
It's kind of a turnoff, no? I mean, you're in a game that you desperately, you'd think, would want to win. It's nationally televised, and you can't play the I mean, he was the best player on that team last night. You can't play him because of a minutes restriction?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I don't know. I mean, he's with ease. I mean, he scored 34 with ease, and he's already at, I mean, close to 33 minutes. You can't, I mean, what's an extra, you know, 2-3 minutes going to
right. do? I mean, you know, not playing him, I can almost understand. But you're telling me 33 minutes, that's allowable? 37 minutes? We can't? No, no. He can't play 37 minutes, really?
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. You're right, Joe. It is. It's mind-boggling.
Well, I can't tell what they're trying to do. I don't know. Is this like, are they playing mind games with him to almost like, to make him look bad in front of his teammates to kind of force his hand to like actually, you know, take it upon himself? To stop with this, the load management and everything else? This feels like this was one of those problems last year where he wanted to be treated the same as Kawhi was being treated. And the players got kind of turned off because he's not on the same level as Kawhi. Like, if you're one of his teammates, I mean, are you not like, well, what are we doing here? Like, why? You've already played almost 33 minutes. You can't play, like, we can't play
ridiculous.
Him 3 more minutes?
It's ridiculous. And he was great. You know, I you could almost understand it if he was mediocre. You say, well, he hasn't been great. He's been hurt. Maybe you don't want to, you know, work him too much, but he was sensational, right? Defensively, he's terrific. Offensively, he was great. He was playing a great game, and it was noticeable. Like, you looked over, you're like, wait, Paul George in this game with 5 minutes left is not in it? That's a joke.
No, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I mean, I don't think it's fair to kill Ty Lue over this. It's not Ty Lue's call. Like, that's clearly an organizational decision, and what they're probably doing is trying to take every excuse away from Paul George. Because, I mean, you know, they came up with all of these different things as to why they blew that lead in that series that they had against the Mavs in the bubble. And now it's a situation where you're trying to set yourself up to compete for a championship again. I guess the Clippers are saying, we want to make sure that we get everybody to the postseason healthy. And if it means putting a hard cap on the minutes that they're allowed to play in a regular season game, so be it. Because it's not about winning regular season games against the Nets. It's about trying to get your team to the NBA Finals.
Now, by the way, I'm glad you mentioned an organizational decision. Because is there a better treat in all of sports than watching Steve Ballmer? I mean, how entertaining is that? Watching him jiggle and gyrate on the side all alone, masked up. It is wonderful.
If they had a feature, like if Game Day you got a feature on
If they just
on
had
your,
a channel.
Yes.
Just the Steve Ballmer channel.
Yeah, I would watch him. Like if I could go two screens where I'm watching the game,
yes.
And I'm like a top corner of the screen, I could just get Steve Ballmer, I would do it all day. Guy's the best.
He's awesome.
I love him.
Watching him.
You like watching him jiggle and gyrate, Dave?
What'd you say?
You like watching him jiggle and gyrate, huh?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
No, I enjoyed that greatly. I thought that was wonderful last night. It's great. The guy's worth, you know, $1 trillion, and yet late stages of a basketball game, he is completely unhinged. How great is that?
Yeah, he's fully invested. You remember, how good was the press conference when Kawhi and Paul George, when he's introducing those two, and how fired up he was?
Oh, he gets excited.
But that's what I mean. If you're a player, I mean, he may be like a little bit overboard for some people's taste. I like it.
I love it.
I mean, but to have your own, like to look over and see your owner behaving the way that he's behaving, I don't know how as a member of the Clippers, how you don't love that. I would love it.
Well, I think you have to.
Being that emotionally invested in your team's success.
I mean, he's clearly desperate for his guys to go out and win. And it's terrific. I think it's nothing else, at least for us, for me, it's highly entertaining to watch
it's
a guy
relatable
in
too.
His mid-60s react like that during a regular season basketball game.
Isn't it relatable, though, too?
It's totally relatable.
Like, this guy could, I mean, he's worth, you know, billions of dollars.
Billions.
Owns the team, and he's sitting there every single game, and he's going through the same, you know, highs and lows, ups and downs that you are as the fan. It's awesome.
Makes him very relatable. It is wonderful. All right, let's take a little bit of a listen. And 800-919-3776. I mean, if you're a fan of the Nets, you have to be on cloud nine right now. And we asked it, you know, the other day. We'll ask it again today. I'm actually at the point now, guys, where I will sit here and tell you the only team that can beat this Nets team is the Lakers, and that's if they're healthy. I don't see any other team beating this team. I just think they are too talented. And we say, can they turn it on? You know, they might play Detroit or Cleveland or Washington and go through the motions. I think they can. I think the only team that stands in their way right now is the Lakers. That's it. It's the Lakers, and there's no other club.
Yeah, at this point, Dave, I have to agree with you. I think the Lakers are the team that has the depth and that has the matchup problem in the front court to be able to throw the Nets off their game. But, I mean, this the way this Nets team plays on the offensive end, I mean, they're going to be tough to stop, man. You're not going to be able to shut them down completely, not for four quarters. It's just not going to happen. And because of that, they're always going to be in game. So to be able to win 4 out of 7, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough for any team, and I think it'd be tough for the Lakers, too. I mean, if they met in the NBA Finals, I absolutely think that's a 7-game series.
Oh, I agree with you. I'm just saying the only team that I can see beating them is the Lakers. They can beat the Lakers, but the only team I can see beating them in a 7-game series is the Lakers. That's it.
I would agree, and that's because they have LeBron James, the best basketball player on the planet.
And Anthony Davis pretty special, too.
Yeah.
Just think about that, though. I mean, think all these teams you're going up against, right? So, I mean, you pick the team. You know, late in the game, you know, how many options does that team have game to close a game? How many options does that team have?
Three.
Yeah, three. I mean, look at the Nets. I mean, you got Kyrie can close, Harden can close, Durant can close, and oh, by the way, you have one of the best 3-point shooters in the game.
Yep.
With Joey Buckets.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's like you just pick your poison. Really?
It's dangerous as all can be. And this Bruce Brown is a nice player, by the way.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Did you see the plane this weekend that literally pieces of it fell out of the sky?
It scares the hell out of me. It scares me to death. I mean, you've had a couple of emergency landings, haven't you?
I've had two in my life.
So just remind me not to fly with you ever, ever, Dave.
Awful. Now, the first one, I was a little kid. I was with my mom coming back from Miami.
Hedonism?
We did. We went to Hedonism. We used to go there as a family, and she loved it. And we're on our way back from Miami, and there's a fire in the kitchen. And you'd say, well, how far did you make it? We didn't even get out of Florida. We had to land in Orlando.
Ugh.
And I said, can we please drive home or take the train? And she's like, nope. Right back on the bicycle, and we flew home. And then I have the infamous Vegas story where we're flying, and the pilot announces over the loudspeaker, I'm uncertain whether the landing gear has come down. So we may have wheels, and we may not have wheels. And I'm looking out as we're landing in JFK, and all I see is emergency vehicles. I've had two of those in my life.
That's too many. I hate flying.
Now you
I absolutely
hang on
hate
a
flying.
Second. I mean, you're a pro athlete. You must have flown 10 times the amount that I have in my life, and it still bothers you to that extent?
Yeah, I don't love it. I mean, I haven't had emergency landings. We had one where it was we were supposed to land, and I think something. I don't know if it was. What ended up being in the runway as we were about to land, but we went, you know, as we're coming down to land, landing gear out, all of a sudden we shoot straight back up because I guess something was on the runway, and then we had to circle around and then finally we landed, and then we got struck by lightning one time. But
oh,
I only get nervous.
Did you feel that when you got struck by lightning? Did you feel the lightning hit?
No, just the pilot thought it was, oh, just so enough you guys noticed that, but we just got struck by lightning. We're like, oh, really? We just got struck. That's not great.
And then I get into my own head too. Because there was one time I was coming back, we were living in Raleigh, and I flew by myself back to LaGuardia on Thanksgiving morning, and we were fine, but the pilot says there's so many planes ahead of us, we're just going to circle for a while, and we're circling and circling and circling and circling, and now it becomes very warm, and I said to the guy next to me, I think I might be having a stroke, sir. I said, if I pass out here, can you please, because it's all psychological. I mean, when you think about it, I'm 4 miles in the air. There's nothing that can be done. I guess it was a panic attack, but yeah, no, I've had some moments. I don't like it. I don't want any. I hate flying. I am not a fan.
I only get sketchy when the flight attendants start to get a little bit sketchy.
They never get nervous though.
Well, no, occasionally like when we had the instance where we almost landed on whatever was in the runway. They were starting to get a little bit like hectic, running around a little bit. And I was like, oh, why are they running around? This doesn't seem good. Like, if they're calm, I'm usually okay, but if they all of a sudden get a little bit hectic, I get real concerned.
Chris, do you have any like, the moment of a bad flight? You must have had that at some point, no?
No, I haven't, Dave.
Never?
I haven't, no. And what gets me about the flight this weekend, where all the parts were just falling out of the sky, is that the plane had no issue circling back and landing where it took off from. like no issues at all.
I would be the guy that would just be sitting there calmly looking out the window. All of a sudden, the engine is blown up and is on fire, and I start screaming and panic everybody.
But how does that help anything, Dave?
Screaming.
Oh, my gosh.
What was the movie, Twilight Zone, where like they see a guy on the wing or like an animal on the wing, and he's ripping it apart, and the guy goes crazy, and they have to sedate him? That's what I would be like.
Yeah, you'd have to be taken down. Like, the passengers would have to make sure they took you down and shut you up just because you would scare everybody.
Terrifying.
We're all going to die. Like,
we're all going to die. This is it.
You'd be that guy.
I admit it. I would be. I don't like to fly. Goodbye.
Well, sometimes you have to. I mean, you got no choice unless you're going to drive.
You're right. You have no choice. No choice. All right, let's get to a little bit of Steve Nash here. 800-919-3776, the calls as well. And the story percolating with the Yankees, which we have to touch on as well. All right, Steve Nash, this team right now, and he's right, certainly are coming together at the moment.
You know, like I keep saying, a non-negotiable step in any team's aspirations is to have that resolve and toughness and connectivity. So I've been saying that since day one, and we're starting to see, you know, more consistent efforts. And I just get a sense that our guys are coming together a little more off the floor as well. They're finding a bit of a bond and enjoying playing together and fighting for one another. And that, is other than the toughness and application I've talked about, you know, the fact that those guys have come together a little bit more, look like they like each other and want to play for each other has been the most positive part of the last six games.
They're great. I mean, they are, and you see it happening, and you see it against the big teams. And again, I don't know if they're motivated to play the lesser teams in the NBA right now and if they go and give you a half-hearted effort. But at this point, Chris, I don't think it matters. Like, if they go out against whoever and they lose the game, I don't think it matters that much at this point. They've shown that the better teams, they can beat them.
Well, listen, they're tied with the Sixers in a win column at the top of the Eastern Conference, and it just seems like it's a matter of days before they're the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And, Dave, I mean, I don't see any team that's in the East that's going to be able to contend with this Nets team when they turn it on and when they get Kevin Durant back. I mean, listen, they beat the Clippers at full strength, and they didn't have the second best player in the entire league. Like, that's how good this Nets team is capable of being. So, I mean, to me, the only thing that can get in their way is themselves, and that's if they're not locked in when they're playing against inferior competition. But the one thing we do know is when this team is playing against teams with winning records, they usually handle their business. They're 11-2 with teams that have records over 500. So, I mean, it's just a matter of making sure that they're working on the things that they need to improve on so that they're playing their best basketball once they get into the postseason.
Let's go to Brandon in Orlando. That's the scene of the kitchen fire. Brandon, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing this morning?
What's going on, bud?
So I was just calling regarding the Bradley Beal discussion you guys were having. And a few days ago, I was kind of iffy about the whole thing, but now I'm fully on board. I really think he would be a huge, huge assistance to just join in on this team. And RJ Barrett, he's going to be a good player, but there's times he just makes me want to just, like, punch a hole in the drywall. It's just like last night he was just going in and, like, we're struggling to hit our shots and all, and he's just acting like he's LeBron James, just trying to drive in there and throw it off the backboard and in. And he's being blocked by Karl Anthony Towns every time. And he just kept doing it over and over. And luckily one of them went in. But I think throwing him in the deal, if we're getting Bradley Beal, it's a no-brainer to me. And I really think Bradley Beal would be a huge help to the Knicks right now.
Yeah, I don't know if RJ Barrett ever gets to the level of Bradley Beal.
I don't think he does.
Oh, so if that's the case, I mean, he's still so young. So you hate to just say, like, just make a definitive statement about RJ Barrett. But, I mean, as far as later in that game, I mean, the Knicks consistently tried to do it last night. And, I mean, Minnesota was packing the paint because the Knicks just don't have enough shooting. Was that they were hell-bent on getting into the paint.
Mm-hmm.
And which was not what you should have been doing in that situation. But that's who RJ Barrett and Julius Randle are. I mean, now Julius Randle, I mean, his three-point shot is vastly improved. It is mid-range jumper is silky right now. But, I mean, RJ Barrett, he's not a good shooter. So when he's going to – I mean, he's – the strength of his game is getting downhill and getting to the bucket. And, I mean, he did it – I mean, you bring up the Karl-Anthony Towns block. I mean, that's – yeah, I mean, that sucks. But again, I mean, they don't have outside of Julius Randle anyone to finish.
And when Quickly, and you guys mentioned it, when Quickly and Rose are not scoring, and we've seen that the last couple of games, and you can't rely on them at all, it becomes Randle and Barrett, and there's nothing that they can do really outside of the paint, outside of 15 feet.
Yeah, it's a heavy lift on the offensive end, especially in the half court. So, I mean, if those two guys aren't going, you're going to struggle on that end. But, I mean, to that last caller's point and to what Rick alluded to, I mean, as I'm sitting here thinking about R.J. Barrett, I'm wondering, what are his dominant traits as a player? Like, I mean, I understand what his strengths are, but in terms of the landscape of the NBA and how today's game is played, what would you say R.J. Barrett's dominant traits are?
Dominant traits?
Dominant traits.
I don't think he has a dominant trait.
Exactly. So, I mean, when we have this discussion about whether or not he's a piece that should be included in the Bradley Beal deal, I just think it's a little bit of a no-brainer. Like, I always assume that if you were going to be getting Brad Beal, you're going to have to give up something of worth, something of significance, something that has upside. And to me, R.J. Barrett would be the guy that the Wizards would want. I mean, don't you guys think so? Like, that would be the guy that you would point to and say, if you want a young player, that's the guy.
Here's a question for you. Who would you sooner give up now, R.J. Barrett or Julius Randle? Because I think at this point, if you told me they wanted R.J. Barrett or that's the guy that I'm going to give up, I think I might prefer to do that. And I know that there's, you know, 6 years in age difference, but Julius Randle is a step away from being a star player. And I don't know that you ever get that from R.J. Barrett.
Julius Randle's about to be an all-star.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, if you can hang on to him and then add another all-star, you're talking about having two all-stars on this team that are age 27 and younger. Like, that, I mean, that's something that you can build around. Even if you don't have, you know, the Knicks have five first-round picks over the next 3 years, even if you have to give three of them to the Wizards, two of them unprotected, so what? You still have enough to be able to build around those two all-stars.
But how many young players, I mean, how many on teams that are legit playoff teams that are trying to win a championship, how many young players are huge contributors in that team?
Trying to win a championship?
Like, you're building towards a championship, and you get to a point where all of a sudden now you're winning, you know, you're winning a round of the playoffs, which is what Tom Thibodeau is trying to do. How many young players are huge contributors on those teams? How many young players are contributing right now with the Brooklyn Nets?
Not many.
How many young players?
Now, contributing is a different level too, right? Like, the fifth or sixth guy is different than one of the main pieces on the team.
Yeah, but look at all the teams. Like, all the Knicks fans have said over the last how many years is, you know, we need superstars that want to come to be New York Knicks. And free agency hasn't worked out. So at a certain point, you want to build this thing the right way, create a winning culture, and then hopefully, either through trade, because it's a disgruntled superstar or whatever it is, you get that guy. What happens when a team is like that and you get that guy, usually when that guy comes over, he's trying to win. So he wants to surround himself with guys that can help him win, which are usually more veteran guys, which is exactly what LeBron did with the Lakers,
yeah,
which what they did with Brooklyn. So you can't have both. It's either you want to be a team that has, you know, two or three star players that can build towards winning a championship,
yep,
or you want to stay young and flexible with draft picks. Because it's exciting.
Isn't this why you want to stay young and flexible with draft picks, to go and grab a guy like Bradley Beal? Like, isn't that the exact point?
Exactly. And now you don't risk all of a sudden saying, okay, you know, we'll wait until he's a free agent, and then you do, which we always do, and they say, you know what, we're all set. We don't want to take your money. We'll go somewhere else.
Now, part of the caveat of acquiring him has to be that, you know, you're going to sign here long term.
Exactly.
That's got to be understood.
Has to be.
But I get Bradley Beal. I have Julius Randle. I have Emmanuel Quickly. I have Derrick Rose. You know what? I'm Mitchell Robinson when he comes back in a couple weeks. All of a sudden, I have the makings of a pretty decent basketball team.
Yeah, you got good pieces. I mean, you got Alec Burks. I mean, it hurt you that Bullock didn't shoot well from three last night. Because, I mean, he's supposed to be your shooter on that starting five. That
Burks played well.
Yeah, but I mean, the starting five, which is better defensively than your bench. I mean, the only one that can shoot, really, consistently, or supposed to be able to shoot, is a threat to shoot, is Bullock. He made 1-3 last night.
Yeah, no, he
was. You wonder why they're packing
good.
The paint.
All right, we'll revisit the NBA in a couple of moments, top of the 6 o'clock hour. And, of course, Kenny Canty coming your way at 6:45. Matt Miller, new to ESPN, NFL Draft Scout on Twitter. He is terrific with the NFL Draft. He's going to join us at 7:30 this morning. You know, you kind of expect this Domingo Herman story to go away, Chris, but It's not going away. And I wonder, and there's a good article in The Athletic that I was looking at earlier this morning. I wonder if the reason it's not going away is because the guys saw it. You know, like they saw it firsthand at an event a couple of years ago of how this guy was acting towards his girlfriend, and that's the reason that it's not going away. Because it's not like you heard it happen and it upsets you that it happened, but you move past it. You actually saw firsthand a lot of these guys did of what Herman did to his girlfriend a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Dave, and that changes things. And I mean, Zach Britton said as much at the end of last week. He says he knows too much to just be okay with Domingo Herman being a part of it. But at the end of it, he's not in charge of who's a part of the team. But, I mean, this was going to be hard for him to be able to come back and rejoin his team just because it happened at a charity event in 2019, and a lot of those guys were at that event. And stuff continued to escalate when Herman and his girlfriend got back home, so much so to the point where you had to have a teammate and his significant other come over there and get his girlfriend out of that situation and take her back to their house. Like, that's how bad this thing got. So even though there wasn't an official police report filed, I mean, MLB did the investigation, but just listening to what happened in the accounts of this thing, Dave, I mean, it is really scary stuff.
Yeah, I think, Chris, you made the point about the Ray Rice situation. I mean, Ray Rice, I mean, you're one of his teammates down in Baltimore. I mean, he explained to you what happened, and then, you know, all of a sudden—
He misled us, though.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, then you saw the video, and now you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, that changes how you feel. I mean, it has to.
Oh, there's no question about it. And I say this all the time, man, the locker room is a very forgiving place, with domestic violence being the exception, because everybody's got a mom and some of those guys have daughters. You know what I mean? It's just one of those situations where guys are extremely sensitive about it. And, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion that guys on this Yankees team are going to be able to get past this. It's not. So Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman have some serious work to do in terms of making sure that the team chemistry isn't affected by this. But the reason why Domingo Herman is a part of this Yankees team is because this team needs him. Like, he has to be a part of the equation in that starting rotation. Otherwise, the Yankees have got some problems.
Isn't that what it always becomes, though? And it's really kind of sad and unfortunate, to say the least, is if you're really good, then they're willing to at least accept for what you've done. And if you're not, you're gone. Like, if this was a guy fighting for a spot on the 25-man roster, there's no way he would be here. There is no way he would be here. But because he won 18 games a couple years ago and was really, really good and is really, really young, you're willing to endure the baggage that comes with Domingo Herman right now.
Yeah,
he would have been cut.
Yeah, he would have been gone. But
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But here's the thing, Rico. I think if this story comes out in real time back in 2019, Domingo Herman is gone. No matter how good he is, he's gone. There's no question about it. Like, if this story leaks to the media after that charity event, after that night, there's no way that the Yankees could hang on to Domingo Herman given the current climate. But because they put a lid on it and they allowed themselves to put time and space between when the incident occurred and to when he would be back in pinstripes pitching, I think it kind of cushions the blow for Domingo Herman in order to return. I really do. I think it lands a little bit better with the fan base. Listen, it's never going to be something that sits well with the fan base, period. But I think it lands a little bit better because we're talking about seeing him out here in 2021 as opposed to, you know, knowing the full facts and everything that happened in 2019.
Yeah, I'd be hard-pressed. I guess because he already has, you know, relationships inside that clubhouse, like the guys know him or they thought they knew him. I mean, if he's contrite and everything else, that this would be the best opportunity for him to, you know, to prove to his teammates that he's, you know, he's a changed man and he's going to be better moving forward. So I think he's more likely to be accepted into this clubhouse because they know him. But I mean, if I'm on the New York Yankees and if I'm at that charity gala and I witness him slapping his girlfriend or whatever's being reported, I mean, I don't care how contrite you are.
It's hard.
What kind of conversation me and you have, and the fact that I saw that.
Yeah, it becomes really difficult to get up from.
I would be hard pressed. And I get, I mean, you need him, and he's, I mean, if he wasn't good and couldn't help you win a championship, then he would have been cut already. But at a certain point, I mean, there's more to life than just winning championships.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be about principles, right? I mean, your morals and values mean nothing unless you're willing to stand on them in times of inconvenience. And for an organization that has prided itself on being the standard, you know, both on the field and off the field. This is just one of those things where you look at him and you say, you know, is it really about upholding the standard? Or is it just about trying to win at the highest levels, regardless of what it costs?
But that's what it is right now. Right? I mean, they are trying to win. Because if he was someone else, he wouldn't be here with this team.
No. Well, no, even if he was just a guy.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So it is. I mean, and sometimes, and I think we understand it, sometimes you have to sacrifice your principles to try and win. We don't like it, but I think we understand that that's kind of the nature of the beast.
Yeah, but at a certain point, I mean, Aaron Boone, he apologized for not, you know, not taking into account how this would affect his team. But at a certain point, I mean, the locker room is going to make the decision. If the locker room decides, you know what, this guy, we can't do it. We just can't get past it. He can't be a part of this. It doesn't matter how good he is. I mean, there's something to be said about having, you know, the kind of team chemistry that you need.
You're right.
To get through 162 games.
But, Rico, right. For them to go through all of this and to hang on to this guy for 2 years, I mean, almost 2 years since that thing happened, I mean, for them to part ways with him now, it's like, well, why didn't you do it in real time? Why didn't you just do it in 2019 when the incident occurred?
Their intent is to hang on.
Yeah, they're gonna hang on to him.
Yeah, that's the intent.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.